How to Become, with thanks to Lear Business Services and Training Centre Mullingar, offering QQI certified online courses in key areas such as business administration, management, train the trainer, personal development and bespoke in-company training. LearBusinessCentre.com.
Hello and welcome to another Loose Cannons with myself, Mary Sherwin.
And myself, Helen Steins.
And we're joined today with John Lahey from Lahey Midland Auctioneers, and he also does some BER assessing and certification. So welcome, John.
Thanks very much, Mary, and thanks very much, Helen.
You're here to talk to us as part of our How to Become A series. So it's How to Become an Auctioneer. So John, tell us, how did you get into the business in the first place?
Well, I suppose it probably was a kind of a smooth transition from where I was with my previous jobs. I would have served my time as a plant maintenance fitter, would have been heavily involved in GEA coaching, would have got involved with coaching teams, ended up working with Leinster GEA in Offaly as a games promotion officer. So I coordinated all the games. So I dealt with all the coaches. I was a tutor for the Leinster Council. So I would go out and I maybe coach the coaches as such, involved in summer camps. So I would have been hugely involved with people every day of the week. I suppose from then I was a politician. Still am a politician. I was an independent county councillor. I tried my hand at three general elections. I was involved in setting up a political party called Renewa at the time. So dealing with people and dealing with structures and organisations was just a forte of mine. I suppose after the last general election, it didn't go so well for me. I thought I had a career in politics. I had to review everything and I had to take a step back. And I remember getting out of bed after the general election and going to say, oh my God, what am I going to do now? Because I had given up everything to go down the political route, and then I ended up not getting the general election and no job. So I looked at it and I said to myself, what would suit me best? And I was having conversations with various people that I trust, and someone says, you know what, you'd be a great auctioneer. And I says, I don't know about that, but I looked into it. But it was a heavy road, because it takes 2 years to become an auctioneer. The legislation changed in about 2012, where before you could actually rock up before 2012, actually stand up in the courts, have someone make a reference for you, have your solicitor make representation, and you can actually just apply for your licence. Now you have to go to do 2 years in college, but you also have to be associated with a recognised auctioneer for 2 years. So it's kind of like an apprenticeship as such. So you have that along with 2 years in college, and then you come out the other end of it, and you decide to go work for a franchise, or you actually go out on your own.
So it's a massive commitment now. So you've got college and you kind of almost then have to prove yourself that you're
exactly
able to do the job.
It's actually a very good system, Helen, because you know, you've often hear where you get qualified and next thing you just go on and you're next thing you're a job and you're saying, oh my God, we didn't do this in college.
Yeah.
Whereas everything about the college course is the assignments, there's exams, there's, you know, it's very intense. There's no question, but it's very, very doable.
Yeah. And then it rules out people then that are not good at their job as well, because I guess within the 2 years, you know whether it's really for you or not for you.
You do. And that's actually a very good point, because I think out of a class of 60 we had, I think there was probably just about, out of 60, there's only 40 set the exam. And I think the figures on at the moment, only about 20 actually went on to actually work in the industry. Now, it's very much when you go to these courses, because I know another person I'm helping out that's going through the course at the moment, it's very much Dublin based. So it's a big career in Dublin, because commercial units, properties, like you're selling a property in Dublin, I'd have to sell four of them to get the same commission for what you'd sell something in Dublin. But yeah, it's a very good system. Anybody that's interested in it, you will find out very, very quickly. Because you're, number one is you're paying $7,500 a year. You know, so you'd find out very quickly if you're interested or not interested.
So when you say you're paying $7,500 a year, that's for the college fees?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I suppose like that, you know, you're paying, you're investing in your future. Now, one thing I would say to people is, it's very daunting when you go back, because there's so much volume in what you have to study. But when you look back on the other side of it now, and I look back at it, it's designed for you to pass, but you have to work at it. Because if you're not good at the, say, maybe the theory, you pick it up on the assignment. Mm. If you're not good on, there's competencies and different things that you have to submit. So there's always 5% for this, 10% for that, 20% for that. So they're designed in such a way, if you work hard, you'll get it. Now, if you think you're going to swan it, forget about it. Yeah. You're going to fail, and people
have
failed.
If there's parts of it then that you don't like, it's not the whole lot of it either.
That's right.
You can be good at some parts and and maybe a bit weaker at other parts of it.
That's it, because some people go into an exam and they can't memorise the stuff because this is new stuff to you. It's a new industry and you're trying to work through it. And even people that was in the industry would find it hard to remember stuff. But the assignments were brilliant because you had 40% was going towards your assignments. If you've done a good assignment, you're at 30% before you even go into a written exam. So you can see the point I'm making. If anyone's out there, I would encourage them to do it. It's designed for you to pass if you're willing to work at it.
Right. Can I ask, you mentioned about you're going to go as part of a franchise or you'd set up on your own. So each of them probably have pros and cons.
Yes.
What would your take on that be?
Well, see, franchise, if we go back years ago, you'd always have kind of sole traders. You'd have the Leahy Midland Auctioneer or Kearney Auctioneers or whatever the case may be. I suppose the franchise came in and took over then. The franchise is where maybe someone maybe mightn't be as ingrained in the community, mightn't have that name as such. I was very fortunate in the fact that I had a GA background, I had a political background, and I suppose from my perspective, I had a lot of connections out to a lot of communities. And I just felt, well, I wasn't going to work for somebody else. And I suppose I've, like most people that are self-employed, they have a strong work ethic. So I felt myself, well, if I do 12 hours a day, or do 10 hours a day, or do 2 hours a day, well, it's going to be on my terms. And I suppose that's why I went down that direction.
And I guess then as well, I'm reading between the lines, to correct me if I'm wrong, but you have to be good with people as well. Like, you can't, like, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at you, you don't appear to me as being a shy person. It's my first time to ever meet you, and you're well able to talk to people and communicate with people. Is that an essential part of being an auctioneer?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's something that's dying in our society. People want to email, people want to text, people want to do, like, I remember when I started out first, and now I have a habit of ringing people because you're dealing with people's money and you just need to get them. But I dealt with one situation nearly down to nearly the last signing of the contract. It actually was nearly done all through WhatsApp. Now that is an exception, but if I was to do that, I could actually get away with it. But it takes the whole personal thing out of it. But Helen, on the point of your maker, if you're not good with people and you don't like dealing with people, it's not for you.
Yeah.
I would say that I would talk to 20, 25 people minimum a day, between solicitors, between the vendors, people see in the house goes up for sale. You meet the person, that's great. You meet them in the house and you get the sale of the house. You put it up. You're dealing with your photographer. You're dealing with the person putting up your signs. You're dealing with the print company. That's grand. That's all done. It's bread and butter. But then what you're doing then is if you have to start dealing with maybe 6, 7 or 10 people that are interested in that property, you have to arrange appointments. You have to do this. You have to do that. You have to do that. And if you haven't the energy for that, don't go into it.
So you have to be, everybody has to be treated equally. And I guess you have to meet a person. A person has to kind of like you, don't they? Because they're entrusting you either, one, to get their home or two, to sell your home.
Yeah, and that's the most difficult part is people matching the expectations and people to actually grow a fondness towards you to say, hey, we trust this guy. This guy, we think that. Because people shop around. People will go and they'll have someone else sitting in that chair at that kitchen table, drinking that cup of tea an hour before I arrived, and you're dealing with a situation where the house might be, where I feel it's worth 400,000. They might have said, I think it's worth 450. Straight away, they're hoping you drink up the tea quick and get out because there's 50,000 more to be made off the other lad. But that mightn't be the case. But you have to be very prepared going in because you have to be able to say in the property market, well, here's comparables. The house down the road here, not similar to yours, but this, and try to work it from there. And once you secure it, you have some chance. But communication is the key. Because if I'm selling your house, Helen, and I don't make communication with you for 3 or 4 weeks, you're going to go, because this is the only thing on your mind.
Yeah.
Because you want to sell your house.
Yeah.
You need to communicate. And even if there's no one bidding, and I have a policy where I go back to them after, I'd say, I'll communicate with you, but you need to communicate with me. The phone is on. If I miss your call, I'll ring you back. But after 6 or 8 weeks, really and truly, if there's no one looking at your house, the auctioneer has done something wrong or the expectation is too high.
Wow.
I just wanted to ask, how do you find things have changed? Because obviously technology, you mentioned WhatsApp there.
Yeah.
So do you find now that, you know, in the olden days that you'd kind of go around, you'd be establishing this relationship, a lot of stuff is done online or is done over WhatsApp or different. How do you manage that? And how has things changed or how have things changed for you?
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest change I've seen in all my career path. I would say when I was in the GEM politics, you would always ring somebody and you'd always physically talk to them. Nowadays, it's actually acceptable to WhatsApp or a text message or an email to say your appointment is such time, such date. Now, that's grand, it's convenient and whatnot. I find myself probably doing more and more of that because a lot of people that we buy in houses are first-time buyers.
Mm.
First-time buyers are 9 times out of 10 working during the day. So basically what you do is you might get, can you text? And you, then once you get that, you text and say, listen, it's okay to meet. You know? Like I had a house for sale in Tullamore. Now it was an exceptional house. It was at the right price bracket. It was at 250. I felt it would go to 265, 270. It went beyond that. So it did. But I had 16 people look at the house. Now 16 people is a lot of people. But normally when you have 16 people looking at something, straight away you might be down to 5 or 6 very quickly because people say, that's not for me. But everybody showed an interest in this house. So I nearly done all my work through actually texting people until it got down to the last 3 or 4.
And how do you deal with the disappointing of the 15 people?
Yeah.
And then I know a friend of mine, Camilla, has bought a house recently and it was like watching the bids on her phone.
Yeah.
And like watching your price range and then watching it going up and up and up, and like, yeah, how do you know where it's going to end? And
yeah, it's a killer. The first thing I always do is that, and today I was at a viewing of a house and, you know, someone said to me, where do you think this will finish up? I'll always be honest with them saying, well, I do believe that this will probably go 5,000 or 10,000 above. You kind of have a good idea.
Yeah.
It's like we're, I'm at it every day, no different than any auctioneer. You kind of get a sense of what's in front of you, what's happened in the past. That's the beauty about property and in the residential world, comparables, and people will only go to a certain distance in it. But the disappointment, I've often, listen, you get so used to it, to be honest with you, Helen. It's not right. That you get hardened to it or not that you're not sympathetic.
Yeah.
But it's just, you just hear it on the phone and they go, oh, no, you're joking. They didn't go an extra 1,000 euro, did they? Oh, that's us out, John. Oh, if you hear it, you know,
yeah,
and
yeah,
you hear it in the disappointment.
Well, I suppose it's like every job, and there's downsides to all our jobs, and somebody will say to you, oh God, I don't know how you do that on a day-to-day basis, and you kind of go, well, you kind of have to, or then the job is not for you, I guess.
Exactly. Like, I'd be wrong to say to you that if someone rings me in the morning and they're bidding for a house, and next thing, someone outbids them, I'd be wrong to say to you 2 minutes later, I'm still thinking about them, because that's just not reality. You're just moved on to the next call, next call. Because at the end of the day, I have a job to do for the client.
Yeah, or moved on to look for the next house for that 15 disappointed people.
Yeah. And I just see now, the one thing that I've seen majorly in the last maybe 18 months, it's the same people kind of looking for the same properties. And the one thing that's happened is that because of interest rates with the mortgages, people that wouldn't have looked at property X is now back looking at property X because that's all... that's where the price range has gone. So, listen, it's there's a lot of good in it too. There's a lot of people there when you give that phone call and you'd say, you're the highest bidder, there's nobody else, the underbidder has pulled out. And you could, you know, you can imagine then after, you can just say to yourself, that sitting room or living room or kitchen, they're jumping around the place.
Yeah, so
Jonathan, do you have that as well?
Yeah.
Do you find that a property can be hard to sell at times? And what would you say to somebody who is going to sell their house? Because sometimes people, you just mentioned that whole, they can imagine themselves in the living room. Some people can't get past maybe cosmetic stuff that needs to be done with the house, that they can't imagine themselves in there. So if somebody was going to sell a house, what advice would you have for them?
Mary, I think you must be an auctioneer. Because I tell you, that's exactly what the situation is. I sit down with people and they'd say to me, John, I'm going to sell the house. You sit down with them. What do I need to do? I think about changing the kitchen. First thing I do is say, you're not changing the kitchen because there's no value in changing the kitchen because it's
somebody's going to pull it out.
Someone's
going
to pull it out. Go change, do the bathroom. You're not doing the bathroom. You're leaving that there. I'm going to do the en-suites. No. But the one thing I would always say to people, if they get the opportunity, you can't beat a bucket of white paint and everything looks fresh. And you've mentioned something there, Mary, in terms of people's mindset. The one thing I would see is we're in a generation whereby we nearly know that's a concrete wall, that's a brick wall, that's studded partition, this, that. People nowadays only see 3 bedrooms, bathroom, kitchen. They don't care what fibre is in the house. But the one thing they do see is they cannot see beyond a wall that might have a couple of maybe rod plugs stuck in it, or they might have a couch to stare that's a bit tattered. And I do be amazed that just their mindset is, oh, it nearly puts them off. And people laugh at me when I say this to my generation because we understand building. Nowadays people just want something that's clean, it's tidy. Because we live in a world where people look at stuff on the phone and everything is a picture perfect room, perfect life. And for them to see around it, it's crazy at times.
Yeah, because Instagram and you know, oh, there's all of these property brothers and all of these programs around houses, no more than Dermot Bannon, you know, so and the whole, we talked about social media on here, that you're constantly comparing yourself to other things. So obviously in this business, they're comparing a house to a show house, which a second-hand property is not.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You mentioned Dermot Bannon. Oh, if I got a Europe every time his name is mentioned, I'd be well off, because everyone has this romantic idea. To watch this on the programme, there's this romantic idea that they're going to do this and that and the other, and it's going to be all glass and it's this, that and the other, and then to get the builder out, it's a different story altogether.
Yeah. Do
you know? So, yeah, it's all money at the end of the day. But the very simple thing for anybody selling there at the moment is, regardless if it's a three-bed semi, if it's a terraced, if it's a detached, the one thing you can't beat is a bucket of white paint or neutral colours. It looks well in the photographs, and I would say declutter. So when I mean declutter, I mean if there's a locker that's jammed against the wall, that's coming out, because people want to come in and openly see your room. The best way and the fastest way to sell a house is actually empty rooms.
Wow.
No beds, no couches, no nothing, because then people don't have an opinion of what's in the house.
Right. Yeah.
They're buying the house.
So you need to get a friend that's a clean freak and get them to call over to visit you and try out. Everything out.
Yeah, yeah. I'd often say to people is that say they have a lot of stuff, and I'd say, right, could be a three bed, could be four bedroom. I'd say, we're picking a room and that stuff's going into that room.
Right.
We're not taking photographs of that room, but everything that we need to do for photography is going into that room. Now, people panic shocking when it comes to a photographer coming. I use a professional photographer, David Quinn, great guy. He does the drone footage, does the videos, does photography, does it all for me, does the full package. But the one thing when he comes is, because you'd meet the person, you'd know they're anxious about selling their house, and next thing they think they have to go on a deep clean. But we'd often find this, listen, there's two of us coming, we'll take the locker, we'll take this out, and we'll put it out in the corridor, we'll take the photograph and put it back in.
Yeah.
You know, because people panic.
Yeah, yeah.
They just it's amazing the stuff that panics people. They just, oh my God. And then, naturally enough, you send the photographs back and then they feel at ease. Well, take out that photograph, take out this. And then you're on a winner straight away.
Yeah, because the photographs can make things look, like if you take a photograph properly, it can make things look good.
It can. Yeah. And in fairness to my guy, he doesn't play around with the photographs. He takes three or four angles of anyone looks at my website, they'll see maybe of a standard house, you could have 60 or 70 photographs.
Okay.
Some people say it's excessive. But if you're buying, you want to scrutinise every corner.
Yeah.
And I find what happens is it quickens up the viewings, because people are, if they're interested in something, they'll have viewed it about 30 times.
Yeah,
and they're able to tell me what's in the room before I go into the room, because they have it memorised nearly.
Yeah, and they've seen the room from every angle, so they know that is exactly what the room is.
Exactly.
There's grey areas.
And my guy David Quinn has been complimented on more times in the fact that he hasn't altered the photographs, because there's nothing as bad, ladies, as altering a photograph, someone walking into the house, and straight away you're on a negative. I wouldn't let it happen, you know. It is what it is.
It's a bit like catfishing then in property, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So there's the auctioneering piece and selling a house, but then there's the other bits around it, like solicitors and the mortgage and the bank. So any learnings from that as far as you'd be concerned for people?
How to Become. With thanks to Port Arlington Further Education and Training Centre. Learn about our full and part-time further education and training courses and our third level and higher education undergraduate and postgraduate courses. PortArlingtonFETC.ie.
Mary, we're going so well since you started mentioning that now, because that is where the work is. There is no question. Anybody who's thinking about getting into this industry here is everything that we've spoken up to now, that's
part of it.
It's easy. You know what I'm saying? You're meeting people, meeting new people, you're getting bids, you're keeping everybody happy, you're keeping the client happy. But now when you go sale agreed, now you're into labour intensive. Now, some can flow, no problem. But there isn't a house out there at the moment that needs an engineer's report, because naturally enough, if you're borrowing money from the financial institution, they want to see that the house is structurally perfect. So what happens is, naturally enough, that's one call you're going to get. John needs to see the house. You have to organise it. Someone's living there, they have to move, they have to get out. Just while that's happening, doors have to be open, closed, blah, blah, blah. Then you have an independent valuer, because the banks want to make sure that I'm not selling something that they don't have equity in. So then you have to sort that. But then you could have a situation whereby an estate is not taken in charge. So the council might need to get a letter there to say, well, we have the roads, we have the lights, this, that and the other. But then there's the tickle-tackle, because the legal system at the moment is it's taken 4 or 5 months to close. So if I went sale agreed with any of your houses tonight, basically you're looking at 4 or 5 months. People, when I say that to them, they'll say, you're mad. Mm. We'll have it done in 3 months. It's still 4 or 5 months. Now, I don't know if it's because the solicitors are so busy or what the story is, but it just takes so long. So then typically what you get is you get a phone call. John, we've no contracts across. Then you have to go on to the purchaser or the vendor, depending on which side is ringing you. And you'll say, no, then they have to go on to their solicitor. Then they come back to me. Then I have to go back to them. And there's a lot of to and fro in there. But here's the thing, ladies, you have to be on the ball with that. Because if someone's ringing you after buying a house, you can't leave that for a week. That's an instant phone call. That's jumps in. Now, that's where technology comes in handy.
Yeah.
That's where the WhatsApp comes in, where someone fires something onto you. John, with no contracts through, you can fire that on and say, listen, can you get an answer on this for me? That speeds it up. But you do get the phone calls.
Yeah.
And like people get worried because number one is you have somebody that's selling their house, they want to get paid ASP. You have somebody that's getting the mortgage and not moving on the other side. And they're saying if they change their mind. You know, so there's a lot of to and fro in it. And if you have say you have maybe 10 or 15 properties on the go, the multiplier effect in that is massive.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm just thinking you must have somebody, a right-hand person in your office who helps you out a lot. Like obviously you wouldn't be able to do all that on your own. So that'd be really important for you too, wouldn't it?
I have an administrator. It happens to be my wife. Do you know what I'm saying? She doesn't fight with me at all. And I'm so lucky. If she's listening to this, she'll say, that's not the correct anyway. But no, you do. You need somebody to just... Now, a lot of the stuff, people, when you're dealing with the person... So if I'm selling Helen's house, for example, Helen doesn't really want to be chatting maybe the administrator in the office. Helen wants to be chatting me because, you know... And then when you're doing the viewings, that's the other thing about a licensed auctioneer. Only a licensed auctioneer can actually go out and discuss pricing. So if, say if I had, say, someone in the office, I couldn't say to them, go on out there. They can open the door.
Right.
But they cannot. They cannot. No, no, it's very, very strict. So you'd be running like, typically today now, I had 6 or 7 viewings. Now I was chasing my tail a bit, to and fro. Now, but you have to be that personal touch because people that are dealing with you want to kind of have that continuity as such, you know. But you're dead right, Mary. You need somebody... When it gets to the scale of when you have, like, I would have had, say, in the last year and a half, I would have had 50 properties on my books. I probably currently at the moment is I have probably 10, 12 active ones. So if you're only getting 3 calls a week, every week on them, it adds up.
A lot of calls.
A lot of calls.
And learning from the job, what have you learned from being an auctioneer?
I suppose the learning probably had been done before I got into auctioneering in the path that I've taken with politics and dealing with people. And I would have been hugely, and still am, very community orientated. So I'm used to dealing with people. But the big learning is, you could get someone on a bad day. Mm. So Mary could have a bad day and she's selling the house to you. And she could decide, whatever's going on in her head, she could decide, John, change my mind, taking it off the market. Now, I know that mightn't be the case. Mm. And you just need to just settle and maybe deal with that tomorrow. Come back, and not saying that happens the whole time. Another issue could be someone come back and they'll say, we've agreed 185,000 for the house. Mary might have said, John, the one next door went for sale. I'm thinking now that we probably sold it too cheap. I think we need another 5,000. Well, straight away, you have to be stern there. You'd say, hold on here. We don't know that sold next door. That's rumours. And you settle the person down and say, we agreed this. Do you know, like I had a situation before whereby I had a house sold. When sale agreed. Now, here's the thing about auctioneers. Nobody trusts an auctioneer because everybody thinks they're being played. But it's a very, very dangerous game to play if you're an auctioneer. And I'm going to stress this to the people that are listening. If I take a bid, I have to record the bid. If someone reports me and says to me, I think I was played on this and I think I was the only bidder, I have to come back and have to have names, contact numbers that the PRSA could ring up and say, hello, Joe. Just checking here, PRSA here, did you give a John Lahey for bid for such a thing? So people think they're being...
Wow, so these auctions that we're watching and the price of the house is going up, they are, like, there has to be a paper trail behind
it. Has to be.
Wow.
And if there's not, then you're in serious trouble.
Okay.
And like you take it, you know, that's a very, very dangerous game. But I suppose the point I'm making here is that I had a situation whereby I sold a house, got a very good price for the house, the vendors were very happy. The underbidder came back after a week and says, I want to put a bid on. And they were giving me 5,000 over what I had already had gone sale agreed on. I said, no, sorry, it's gone sale agreed. And they said, oh no, okay, sorry about that. Next thing you ring back in an hour, we'll give you 10,000 over.
Oh gosh.
I said, no. Right, at this stage now, I have a duty of care to go back to the vendors. I went back to the vendors. Now, thankfully, they were honourable people. And they said to me, no, we're happy, John. You got the price. They had their opportunity. I went back to them and I said to them, why didn't you come earlier? "Oh, we thought you were playing us. We thought there was no one else, only us." I go, "What? Well, that's crazy." No. But then they end up writing to the vendor. They wrote to the vendors and offered the extra 10,000 euro. So from, I suppose the point I'm making here is, if I didn't communicate that with the vendors, they would have said, "How long had he this guy?
Yeah, why didn't you come and tell us?
Why didn't you come and tell us? Yeah. Is he doing a deal for this that he's over here?" There's so many moving parts.
Yeah.
And the only way to get around is communicate.
Well, I guess politics then as well, as that makes you like that you... It gets you that you have to communicate with people, because personally, when I was a kid, my dad ran for the local elections a couple of times and knew about the work that it involved and the amount of people there was calling to the house, and even to run an election and going canvassing and all that. Like, you're telling people things and then you have to tell the next person. So it is a big learning curve there about communicating with people.
It is. And like I'm an independent councillor. I've tailed back a good bit in terms of, I had ambitions for the Dáil, so I don't spread my wings the way I used to do. I have my own little area now. I cover that. If someone rings me, I'll deal with it. But I've stopped actually making commitments to people. Because I'm running locally, what I'd say to people is, you're voting for me. If you're in trouble and you think I can help you, ring me.
Yeah.
I have 15 years experience in it. I can tell you yes or no. But I find myself, what I do is that, like, I would have taken two calls this week, and this is probably a prime example. And the two I realised, them people were over the threshold, hadn't a hope in the world of getting what they wanted. I told them straight, "I don't think you're," and this is the reason why, and they thanked me for being honest with them, and blah, blah, blah. Previously, 15 years ago, I would have thought that I would have changed that, and I would have changed government policy, and I would have done this, and I would have having them ringing me every month, say, and it'd still be having them ringing you every year. So I suppose experience tells you that if you know what you're talking about and you know it's not possible, just be honest.
Yeah. So we were going to ask you your advice to your younger self. So I guess you've almost told us what your advice would be to your younger self then.
Yeah, that would be it. Like, but that only can come by learning. Like, 15 years is a long time in public life, dealing with people left, right and centre. Understand that sometimes I feel that I'm probably, one disadvantage is that when I went into the council first, I actually made it my business to actually try to understand everything about the council, what people's entitled, not entitled to. Sometimes that can be a deterrent, because I'll tell you a funny one now. I remember this person came to me about 2 years ago and says to me, "John, we're going to apply for a medical card." I looked at that and I said to myself, "Listen, you don't meet the criteria. You're about €300 over the threshold per week. Never mind anything else. Even on the medical side of it, unless your doctor does A, B and C, you're wasting your time." I remember them going away and saying, "Thanks very much." But I remember meeting them after, and it could have been a bit longer, but I remember knocking on the door and I said, "How are you, Joe? How's things?" Thought it was a dead cert vote. And he says to me, "Well, no vote for here for you this time, John." And I go, "Why, Joe?" He says, "I went to you about a medical card. You never got me the medical card." I said, "I guarantee you still didn't get a Joe," because I knew he was still working. He says, "I didn't." But he says, "The other politician down the road, they're still writing letters. They're trying."
Oh, Lord.
So I said, "Joe, fair enough. You give that other politician, because that other politician, you're giving them a vote for telling you lies, or they don't know the system, one or the other." So it's impossible to keep people happy, you know? Impossible.
So, Camille, have you any funny stories about auctioneering? You know, because I imagine that you could walk in on people doing kind of untoward things in houses, maybe, or that kind of stuff. So anything that strikes you?
Yeah, there's one thing that strikes me. It's not like I got caught, but I learnt my lesson. There's two houses for sale side by side, and I was selling one. One had needed a substantial amount of work, which is the one I wasn't selling. The other one was in better condition. There was about maybe 35,000-40,000 between them, the houses. And I remember someone came into view anyway, and they were all enthusiastic, and I had no offer on the house. "We'll give you the asking price, give you the asking price, that's it, we'll give you the..." I was delighted. You know, I was going back and I was saying, "We have the asking price, we have..." Yeah, going back to the event, I was only new in the game as well, all excited about it. Next thing, I started to maybe send them across, needed a deposit and the whole lot. They were going to buy it, and next thing I went back and I sent them a text which is saying, "Listen, you're buying it for 235,000 and they come back and said, "No, we're buying it for 200,000
Oh my God.
I said, "That wasn't the agreement." So I rang him. This wasn't the agreement. It says, "You said you'd give me the asking price." But the asking price is 200. And I realised then, wrong house.
Oh no, and there was... Oh, gee. Mary.
Yes.
So you've got to be very careful. You're very clear on what you're sending. But then again, it was always going to be copped. But again, the vendor wanted to sell quickly. And we thought we're... So I had to go back and tell the vendor, "No, sorry. He actually thought we were in the other house." Do you know?
Wow.
So it just shows you, just simple little things, you know.
Now, this might be a silly question, but I have to ask.
Yeah.
what is the difference between an auctioneer that sells like as in, you know, a sale?
Yeah.
So auctioning, bang the hammer.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
Yeah, I'm qualified to do that.
Have you got the voice?
Can you
do the bang bang and on the bid, like all that kind of talk?
Well, I tell you, definitely can talk anyway.
Right. So,
yes, you can. I suppose
but you
that
can
I
do
can.
The very fast talking where nobody absolutely has a clue what you're saying, and then bang, sold.
No, I haven't gotten the situation where I got to that point. It will happen.
Okay.
I had a couple of pieces of land that maybe the farmers were thinking about going to auction. And they didn't go, decided to go private treaty after, which is going to the open market. But yeah, it's something that wouldn't faze me now.
And do you have to learn how to do that?
You do, yeah. But it's very, very simple.
Wow.
Because it's actually only repeating the same thing very, very quickly.
Yeah.
You do think about now. All you're doing is occupying space. Because I'm waiting for the day that it happens and I want to do it. And I want to drop the hammer and I want to blah, 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 blah. But it actually is, when you look it up, because I researched it, it's actually the three words, bang, 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 really, really fast. And
right.
Just repeating yourself until a bid comes.
Okay. And
so it sounds, when you break it down, that's what it is.
That kind of makes sense, actually, because
yeah.
They don't want silence because that's not going to generate anything.
Kills the room.
And then, exactly. So that it's a bit like a radio. You can't have radio silence because that's not going to make a good show.
The only thing that I would have experienced is listening to horses being auctioned. And you're right. You say, good horse here now, good horse. Yeah, good horse.
Yeah,
good,
yeah.
Wow. Mary sold.
Girls, you want to be careful. I could have signs on your house before you go home.
Oh, Lord.
Come here, he just wanted
my
to
dad
ask.
Would probably let you sell the house if he thought you could sell me with it.
I know, Helen. They wouldn't even get the asking price for you. Come here, what's the best thing about the job?
The best thing about, for me, it's the movement of so many jobs happening all during the day. It's just constantly, now you have to be organised, you have to have the diary, you can't be missing appointments, you can't be late for appointments. But for me, it's like I would spend an hour maybe every evening looking at the calendar, updating it, looking at it again tomorrow. Thank God for the Google Calendar, because it was a time when you would writing and rubbing out and scribbling and tip-ex and everything else. But you'd be constantly watching appointments. And the other thing you need to be mindful too is no point sitting at a house if you know you have to make contact before just to make sure people have the right day. Night before, just a quick text day, boom, 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 you're still okay for tomorrow. Because you could be travelling maybe 20 minutes and next thing you're sitting there and there's no one there. So but for me, it's the multiple tasks. It's constantly this, that and the other. It's just so rapid. You know, and that's what I like about it. But the one thing that we didn't touch on, we talked a lot about sales. I don't do residential, say, lettings in terms of the rental market.
Rental properties.
Rental properties is now, if anybody wants to get into to real estate and to specialise in property management, they are going to be a well-off individual in X amount of years' time.
But will they have the properties to rent to people?
Brilliant, brilliant point. When I went out on my own, was telling myself my target was I was going to get somewhere between 50 to 80 within 3 years. Problem is they're not out there.
Yeah.
Now, where other auctioneers maybe would have got the bulk of them would have been through the boom when people are buying second homes.
Mm.
And they would have got maybe 20 or 30 or 40 and built it up over the years. But there's nobody getting into residential lettings at the moment. Mm. Number one is the stock's not out there. But it's a nightmare for an agent. I would not go into it. Thought I was going to go into it. And the reason I said it, and every auctioneer I spoke to, you know, you'd reach out and you'd say, what do you think, blah, blah, blah. Everyone would say to him, John, you're crazy to go into it.
Yeah.
And of course, I looked at it and says, no, if people don't want to go into it, there has to be money in it. But I'm telling you, ladies, you want to be a different animal for that world. Because the legislation is all for the tenant. And if say, Helen, you give me your house and you'll say, John, I want you to properly manage that. And roughly you get, for every year's rent, you get a month. So say, give or take, €8,000 you get to property manage it, right? Now that sounds grand. And say you have 30 or 40 of them, that sounds great. But what happens is the tenant, Mary's your tenant, Mary decides she's not going to pay. Who's the first person you're going to ring?
You.
You're going to ring me.
Yeah.
Right? Now I'm on to Mary, right? Next thing I'm trying, Mary never paid. Mary's promised me some moon stars. I'm coming back ringing you.
Mm.
You still haven't received it. You have a mortgage on it because it's probably a second home. You're furious with me. Mary is spinning me a story. Next thing Mary decides, I'm not going to pay. Next thing you're going to a residential tenancy board. You're caught up in litigation for 6 months without Mary paying.
So she's still living there.
She's still living
free.
There.
Yeah.
Now here's the other side of it. You give her a notice to quit. She is entitled to X amount. Mary might decide not to pay you. Then she might contest And she says, no, I'm not. I'm going. And next thing you've gone on the legal route. Now, when this is all costing you money.
Mm.
But what happens then is just before they get to the steps of the court, they'll say, no, here's the keys back.
And nobody gets any money.
No, and you're down maybe 18 months.
And I'm still paying my mortgage.
You're still paying your mortgage.
Yeah.
You might have no rent. Now, we're talking about minority. There is some brilliant, brilliant tenants out there. And they're absolutely. But you only need 10. Of 100 or one out of 10.
And then what if Mary's having parties every Friday night and my neighbour rings me?
Yeah.
But then I ring you. Or
exactly.
Yeah.
Then I'm going now, you're ringing me.
Yeah.
I'm going ringing Mary.
Mm.
Right. Now that's what you're paying me.
Yeah.
Because don't forget now, you've given me a fee to manage this.
So you need a solicitor, a counsellor. You need all sorts of heads on your shoulders, to deal with stuff.
You do,
like
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm going to Mary, and Mary's saying to me, John, that was only once off, and blah, blah, blah. Mm. But you're ringing me in 3 weeks' time. But every time you ring me, you're giving me a bollocking.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
I think there's good money to be made in it. I don't think there's going to be too many in it in years to come.
Mm.
But it's I think it's separate to sales. I think you have to specialise in it.
Yeah, and I do know from personal experiences talking to a friend of mine who came home from the Ukraine, and then he was living with his family and he wanted to move into another, and he was afraid to ring the auctioneer in Enfield in case they didn't know him, and you know, he's bad English, blah, blah, blah. And I contacted the guy and I said, look, this is a good guy. He has a job, he has a family, he's staying in Ireland and he's very solid. And he said, well, I don't actually have any properties to rent.
Yeah.
And he said, and possibly for the next 6 months, I won't have any properties to rent.
And the calls keep coming.
Yeah.
You know,
and like there me was ringing him and the guy ringing him. So there were two calls that he got and there was no business out of either of those calls.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, that's just where it is at the moment, unfortunately.
Mm. Wow.
So thanks a million. That was a very informative chat. Lots of interesting stuff coming at us. It's a goodbye from the Loose Cannons and from myself, Mary Sherwin.
And lucky enough, neither myself or Mary went on auction tonight. So we'll be here to talk again. John didn't take us on to sell us. But there you go. From myself, Helen Steins. Thanks a million.
No, but and you're very saleable, girls, I have to say.
Oh, wow. Thanks, John.
Do you think I don't know, John? That was John Lahey. Telling us all about the pros and cons of being an auctioneer, and John is there to you're in the Offaly region.
Yeah, I didn't know, it's Midlands. I'm covering Laois, Offaly, Westmeath. I suppose Offaly would be the primary business at the moment, but I have got property in Laois and Westmeath, but it's like it just takes time to expand out.
Okay, brilliant. Well, listen, thanks, John, for your time.
Thank you very much.